We're talking with Brad Olson about his new book, Modern Esoteric. Pretty wide-ranging discussion about many of the topics near and dear to our heart here on Coast to Coast. We'll be opening up the phone lines with your questions and comments, but also we'll be asking Brad about who pulls the strings. Who is it that calls the shots in this scenario he's describing for us? Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Brad, I have two other questions I want to touch on before we open up the phone lines. Before the break, we were talking about the Star Child skull, and I want to get your take on it. Alien-human hybrid, what's the evidence and what's your feeling about it?
Alien-human hybrid is my best look at this thing, because if you look at the picture of it, it does not look human whatsoever. But Lloyd Pye was doing the DNA tests on it, and he was coming to the conclusion that it did have some human DNA, but it also had some foreign DNA. And just before we can go on, I got an email from a listener, and I'd always like to make a correction. I move so fast and I talk so fast about the Rh negative blood. Is actually a mother has to be Rh negative. And Rh basically stands for rhesus or rhesus monkey. And an Rh negative baby with an Rh negative mom is safe, as the mom's body immune system does not see it as dangerous foreign invader. But her immune system sees Rh positive babies as foreign and dangerous, like a germ or a virus, and mounts an attack on that baby's blood to kill it. And again, this is very much unique with humans alone. And the fact that we do have these very strange skulls, as we were talking about the elongated skulls from Peru, the Paracas skulls, and then you got the Star Child skulls, and then this abnormality with our blood, it's like, what the heck is going on here? How come we're not the normal species that we're made out to be? That nothing is really going on here, and that these very strange skulls and anomalies are just going below the radar. How come they're not getting the attention they deserve?
In your book, you cover some of the ground that we talked about with Joseph Farrell. He discusses about some those breakaway civilizations, organizations outside of government that call the shots and control things. You have a chapter called Secret Families. Is that your take on who sort of calls the shots, the people who have somehow manipulated science and technology and history to keep us in the dark? Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying, and more importantly, is they've manipulated money, and they have perpetuated this giant Ponzi scheme called the Federal Reserve and the central banking system, and made us all believe that this fiat currency has value, but it doesn't. It's not based on anything ever since Nixon took us off the gold standard in the 1970s. But I'm glad you went into the control section, because really, Modern Esoteric has these three sections: Lifeology, Control, and Thrive. And each one is kind of like its own book. But they do tie together, because you see that a lot of these topics that we're discussing and that you guys on Coast to Coast discuss every night are very much esoteric subjects that don't get the kind of educational attention and media attention that they deserve. And it begs the question, why? Well, it's because these groups don't want it to be told. Maybe because they might have some of this bloodline running through them that's very, very old. And these families that basically control the shots, and there was just a statistic that came out recently that 85 individuals, that's 85 people, own half the resources on this planet. And if that isn't the biggest warning flag I've ever heard, I'm not sure what is, because it shows that wealth is so disproportionate right now, and that these people have such an amazing amount of control with the money and resources that they have, that basically government are their employees, is the picture that I'm seeing by all this. And it all comes down to these secret families, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, and some of these banking families who own the Federal Reserve. But we don't exactly know who they are because they don't reveal themselves, and they don't allow any accounting.
How does that change? Short of bloody revolution, how does that change?
Well, the tagline on the back of Modern Esoteric is the revolution is consciousness. And that is all of us waking up and realizing that we've been duped. And this is one big scam that also feeds into war and poverty and the malnourishment of our own people. I mean, one in five people are going to go to bed hungry tonight, George. And in my mind, that is a travesty. That should not be happening, but it does. And there's so much injustice in this world. And I think a lot of it will tie in to this control mechanism and this hoarding of wealth.
Well, I'd like to believe that improving our consciousness and awareness would improve things overall, but I don't see the Rothschilds and the Illuminati giving up any control because we have more consciousness about our surroundings. Do you?
Well, you know, I think we're at the point of a planetary shift, and I think deep down we all know it. We feel it, and there's a tipping point. The low vibration of evil seems to be increasing, but in actuality, the higher vibration of light is increasing at a much faster pace. And the matrix of darkness is deconstructing, and we're all realizing that we have the potential within us to bring about the needed change. And this old perpetual enslavery system was created with the sole intention of controlling people through various methods, such as the fictitious money systems, our water, our food, and chemicals, to name a few. In the old system, the few were the benefactors of all the Earth's resources at the expense of the people. And while we wake up, we start to see what a sham this is, and things can change because it all begins with our thoughts and our cognitive processes. And people need to realize that they are far more powerful than they've been led on to believe. And that's why the chapters of sacred geometry, sacred symbols, and the pineal gland are in the control section, because there has been an active control mechanism put in place to keep us down, keep this very, very important information from the masses of the people, and to suppress the power of our mind through the pineal gland. And I think that needs to change very much so. And as I said at the beginning of the show, humanity has a right to know this information.
Let's take a couple of calls. East of the Rockies, Jerry in New Mexico. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, George.
How's
it
going?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's on your mind?
All right. Well, I had talked to you a few years back, and I had some experiences, and I just wanted to say that this is all very right on, and there's going to be a shift. It's going to have to do with the sun, and hopefully we'll all make it. But my question is about the mounds in Ohio. I had no idea that there were skeletons, giants found there.
Yeah, there actually were quite a few. Mostly in the 19th century, when these mounds were looked at as opportunities and they could just bust them open without any supervision or regulation, a lot of the artifacts were just sold right on the roadside. There's this great site in Oklahoma called Spiro Mounds, and they found a giant skeleton wearing a suit of armor. There was also another large male, may not have been a giant, wearing a suit of armor in Massachusetts in Fall River. And the great poet Longfellow wrote a very spectacular poem. Even the title of it is called The Skeleton in Armor. And there are numerous mounds throughout the Ohio and Mississippi River Valley that were excavated with these giants found within them.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say one thing, is that a lot of this stuff is confirmed in the Seth books and other books, and I share your feeling about Giza. It's special.
It really is. And I would refer
you
to my Sacred Places book. For information more on the mound sites is Sacred Places North America. I have a lot more of that information in that book.
Jerry, thank you for the call.
No, I studied the Egyptian cosmology heavily, and those people knew something.
Jerry, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, Dan in Southern California. Good morning, Dan.
Oh, good morning, George. How are you today?
Okay, how's it going?
Oh, better than ever. I have learned some amazing things, if it's true. I've heard that the earth is like a garden, and the crop is souls. So it's theoretically possible that all the humans that think they're human are really space aliens playing at being human for a lifetime down here to learn something. And as far as the gold in Fort Knox goes, there is no real gold there, except maybe a token bar or two. The bulk of it was shipped over to Europe in a secret Rockefeller deal.
How do you know that, Dan? Had you ever worked at Fort Knox, or you been inside there?
Actually, I subscribed to the intelligence newsletter that one of John Kennedy's men put out. His name is Dr. Peter Beter. If you type in his name on the internet, you can find his site. They induced a heart attack in him because he was spilling too many beans, but his people still got his 82 intelligence newsletters available on that website. And if anybody's smart, they'll print out and download his 82 audio letters. He called them Dr. Beter audio letter. Because you really can't understand events like without his background information.
Well, I'll tell you what. For right now, we're talking to Brad Olson. So, Brad, maybe we can get you to comment about Dan's remarks regarding this prospect that maybe we humans are actually alien souls trapped in human bodies. Any thoughts on that?
Well, that does tie into some of the reincarnation stuff, and when people are able to look back on their past lives, they do see that they have lived off-planet is a very common theme. I haven't been able to do that yet, but I do know people, including members of my own family, who have, and I know and trust what they have to say to me is what they believe, and part of reincarnation would suggest that we are very much immortal. And then when you tie in some of the blood animalities and the star child and some of the other skulls that have been found here would lead me to believe that there is some kind of hybridization going on. And the question I would pose back to the listener is, what do you think this information would do to, say, organized religion around the world? If we were to suddenly start to say that maybe we do have some ET connection, what would it do to government bodies and even the educational systems? I mean, we're talking about a complete rewriting and a complete reconceptualization of who we are as humans on this planet. And I know for a fact that the Vatican wouldn't really be too happy about saying that. Well, they weren't even happy about us saying that evolution, man from monkey, was for real. But then to tie it in with extraterrestrials just kind of blows the lid off everything.
I don't know. It seems like their Vatican has made a couple of statements in recent years where they're almost gearing us up for something, saying that it wouldn't necessarily conflict with their doctrine that if extraterrestrial life were confirmed. I mean, there's a couple of the Vatican Observatory guy who's come out and showed up at a couple of UFO conferences, and I don't know.
That's true.
It seems like they're moving in that direction anyway.
And it begs the question, why would they make these statements unless perhaps they knew a lot more than we do?
Well, I wouldn't put it past them. First-time caller, John in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hi, John. John in Tennessee, you there?
Oh, hey, is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Oh, great. Great to be on the air. Great show tonight, guys. And I had a question, too, actually. First, I was a bit confused on the blood types. When you say like Rh positive negative, is that in general terms like positive negative blood types, or is that a specific reference to certain types of negative blood types?
Well, the type doesn't matter.
Like, just for
the
example,
only thing
like
that matters is if you are Rh negative or Rh positive, and the conflict is with a mother who is Rh negative. And if she happens to have a baby with a father who is positive and the baby is also positive, if those bloods were to intermix, it would treat it as a virus. It would treat the baby's blood as a virus and seek to kill it. So does that answer your question?
Well, I was going to say, like, for example, I'm O negative, and they say that's like a universal type.
That's right.
So, like,
that's right.
If my mother was a positive, then I might not be here.
Well, if it intermingled, if, say, she got in a car accident and your blood mixed when you were a fetus, no, you wouldn't be here. But, you know, your blood, I have it in my chapter called Blood of the Gods. It's called the super blood, meaning you can give blood to any person in the world, but you can only receive the Rh negative O type yourself, or you'll be in trouble.
And the one other question real quick, I'll make it quick, the elongated skulls in Peru. I did happen to see on the Coast website that video where that guy covertly filmed those elongated skulls in, I think it was Peru.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fascinating video. I mean, I know a lot of people say that that's skull binding and everything. Like, you know how Japanese women used to think beautiful feet were real small and they bound the feet. I kind of tend to think, how could that possibly be? I mean, it would take so long to bind a skull to get that length. And some of the skulls appear to be younger children. And you couldn't possibly deform a skull that quickly, could you?
Well, that's a great point. No, I don't think you could, not to children. And you're right, they have found children. And again, as we were speaking about these Paracas skulls earlier, they don't show any signs of being binded or banded around, that they were just the natural growth. And again, the craniums have a different composition as far as the plates that are made up in the skull. So it does appear to be a completely different subset of humans that had these giant elongated skulls.
Some sort of mark, even microscopically, if that was the case, if they were bound, they could do like a microscopy study to see like lines of ligature around the skull?
Yeah, that's right, that there is a signature when you do bind a skull, and to my knowledge, none of these skulls in Peru have that signs of binding.
Thank you, caller, appreciate it. And I would assume then the Star Child skull doesn't have any of that signs either.
No, but the Star Child skull just balloons out laterally. Like, it's much wider of a skull than ours, whereas these the Peruvian skulls just extend upward and back. You'd have to see the photos that I provide in Modern Esoteric and make a judgment yourself. But clearly, when you see them side by side with a human skull, especially the Star Child skull.
Right. Yeah, I, like I said, I've seen the Star Child skull in person, so I know what you mean. We're talking with Brad Olson about his book, Modern Esoteric. Bo Brummels, take us into the break. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast. A lot of you folks are on the phones. We'll get as many of your calls as we can in just a bit. If you are listening on Streamlink, chances are you're not hearing the songs that we're playing or don't know about the references, but you can always go to the Coast to Coast website. We post all the songs and links to those songs on the website somewhere following the live broadcast, so you can follow along if you want to hear the tunes that we're talking about. And those of you who are not Streamlink members, you might want to go to the website and check it out. It gives you a chance to subscribe, and you can listen to the program anytime you want. You don't have to stay up till the crack of dawn late at night and listen to it at your convenience, and also listen to the archives of 1,000 or so shows, and it's a pretty good deal. So check it out if you get a chance. Brad Olson is our guest. We're talking about his book, Modern Esoteric. The phone lines are almost full, so we'll get back to your calls and questions right after this on Coast to Coast. Back to the phones with your questions for Brad Olson, author of Modern Esoteric. First-time caller, John in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hi, John.
How you doing, George? Happy Thanksgiving, Patrick's Day.
Same to you. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call. It's kind of off subject. Really doesn't have anything to do with the book. I hope that's all right. But
let's give it a try.
It happened about a week ago. We went to me and my buddy Shane. He's actually with me right now. But
hey, George.
Hey there.
We went to a Mexican restaurant, and we had like horrible service. We came out of there, and like we all kind of like, I kind of like felt this presence, and then like we all kind of looked up and we saw what looked like a 12-span wing bat, like an 8-foot-tall bat or something. I'm not sure. I know bats don't get anywhere near that big around here. And we're all wondering if maybe we saw the Mothman, and if maybe you know anything about the Mothman that could help us out.
Well, we did an interview a year ago on the other book in the series called Future Esoteric, and one of the chapters is cryptozoology, in which we explore all the different strange sightings of entities that supposedly don't exist within zoology. And one of them is this Mothman. It's more commonly seen around West Virginia. And it's more of a man-like with wings. I think they may be these Draco reptilians, is my best guess. But sometimes they are seen in more of a bat form, in which case, who the heck knows? But the fact is, there are new species being identified just about every week. They've caught a very prehistoric fish in South Africa about a decade ago that they thought was extinct 500 million years ago. So very strange species continue to pop up, and I don't think it's really fair to just wash it clean and say that what you guys saw was some kind of hallucination.
I would draw a
picture of it and record it, you know, and make sure you keep a memory.
Yeah, John, I'd love to hear more details. How and if you could make a drawing and send it to us, we'd take a look at it, maybe post it on the website if you give us permission. How long does the sighting last?
Less than 30 seconds, maybe like, you know, 15, 20 seconds. We kind of like saw it just soar by and then just disappeared.
How far away was it?
It wasn't I thought it was a UFO at first, but it was definitely alive. We saw it flap, and then it soared, and then turned and, like, disappeared.
Yeah, we all decided it was a creature of some sort,
but huge. We're only, like, 200 feet away from it.
Yeah, we'd love to have more details if you guys want to draw what it looked like. I'd love to see it. The reports of flying humanoids have been around a long time, over most of North America. Some of them associated with Mothman, some of them associated with who knows what, but... Wow, that's pretty cool. I hope you guys would send us more information about it, and we'll maybe share it with our listeners. Thanks for calling in.
No problem.
All right. Frank in Denver on the wildcard line. Good morning, Frank.
How are you, George?
Okay, what's on your mind?
Well, your guest, Brad, is just great. I've been researching this for many decades, and what I've discovered is that we are spiritual beings in a body, and I've what the people that now have the power in this planet, they want to keep this technology a secret to keep us enslaved and keep us stupid so they can run things the way they see fit.
Well, no argument here, Brad.
Me neither.
Yeah, well, it's that's one of the biggest problems that we have is facing these people that want to keep us stupid, and they've learned how to do that, and they use drugs and religion and all this, the news media. In other words, they control that in such a way that we just sort of walking around like stupid animals, and that's their intention, and that's the way it works.
Frank, there's another example of how they control us that Brad mentions in this book, Modern Esoteric, and that's food. Brad, you want to share that with Frank and the other listeners?
Well, it's such an important subject, I had to make a whole chapter of it, and it's called Food Control and Escape. And I do want to leave this book. I know we talk about some pretty dark subjects, but I wanted to leave this book on a positive note and make the point that everybody does have a choice of what they eat. And there's a lot of talk about GMOs right now. It's like we're all hamsters in a grand experiment because nobody really knows the long-term ramifications of eating this GMO food. Then you've got the fluoride in our water, which specifically targets the pineal gland and calcifies it and shuts it down. So therefore, we're losing our innate psychic abilities. And then other things with the food. I mean, look at late night television commercials. Do you ever see any healthy commercials? It's all junk food. So we're, as you pointed out, we are intentionally being dumbed down. They do not want us to figure all this stuff out for ourselves. But I've said it many times, humanity has a right to know. And that's why the word esoteric is so appropriate for this, because you do have to be a seeker to want to learn this stuff and to better yourself.
Frank, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Mike in Cleveland, Ohio. Good morning, Mike.
Excellent. Good evening, George and Brad. Shout out to Leli and Alexis. George, a very interesting esoteric researcher is John A. Rush. His book, Failed God, takes off on John Allegro's work behind the mushroom curtain, sir. Brad, did you ever uncover any esoteric info or capabilities behind tantra or lovemaking and behind sacrifice or fire magic?
Yes, to the first two. Fire magic I'm not too familiar with, but absolutely tantra and some of the Eastern traditions are all part of the Thrive section, tapping into our chakras and knowing ourselves as energetic and spiritual beings. And that's why the subtitle of this is Beyond Our Senses, because a lot of these things are not apparent on the surface. But if you really want to know, such as the power of tantric sex, you can take it to the next level. But again, you have to believe that you're coming at it from a basic level and then working your way up. And in the secret societies the secret schools of old, it was called being an adept. Once you reach decades of learning and practice and acquisition of this knowledge.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. Well, one other question before you go. Fire magic, what do you mean? Oh, he's gone. Next caller on a wild card line, Nancy in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Nancy.
Hello, guys. Very interesting show. Thank you so much. I wanted to get to the blood thing, the Rh negative. I had a child, my third son, and he was born with I had the negative, and he had the positive with a large G, big C, little E. I have no idea what that means. Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I was wondering, now within 24 hours, he developed the problem with his liver. He turned very yellow, and they had to do a full transfer of his blood. But the thing that I don't understand is, how come it never showed up until my third child? Same husband.
Well, it's kind of like how DNA can be regressive. For example, two parents could have blonde hair and black hair, and then they have a redheaded child. Some of these things come two, three generations later.
Okay. Yeah, it was really interesting. It was a hard pregnancy, and I was sick the whole time. I have another question. Do you have any information on indigo children?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I covered that in Future Esoteric, the companion book to this. And indeed, we've seen a huge rise in children who are born with innate abilities such as psychic powers, Now, this could cut both ways. One characteristic of indigo children is they can be very temperamental. They can feel like they don't conform or they don't fit in school, and sometimes they can be a little problematic for a teacher. Yet the ones who really tap into who they think they are showing extraordinary abilities in perception and sometimes even signs of being clairvoyant. And some of them can even astral travel out of their body and do all these amazing things. So I think a lot of this has to do with the time that we're living in, that there is a calling right now, and certain spirits are being born and reborn to be alive right now to help us with the Great Awakening. And that's what we're dealing with right now. We're in the throes of one of the greatest spectacles in the universe, because
wow,
we are a planet of humans who have this free will, so we can do great things or we can do real terrible things. And this is not like, as I perceive, the other ET societies are very much unified in their thinking, that they're very much a mono type thought culture, and everybody is in somewhat of a hive mentality, whereas we're kind of all over the place. And so these indigo children are coming into the scene, kind of stabilizing it and bringing these new abilities, especially as children, and just blowing away their parents. But I'm glad you brought that up, because I find that a very fascinating subject.
Nancy, are you the mother of an indigo child?
No, but I wonder if I'm an indigo adult, because I've never been able to fit in. Same thing with this, everything that he said. I never fit in school. My mother always told me I was always different. I had to do everything different. And, you know, I feel like a loner. I am a loner. But I do have the love of nature and preserving natural, you know, the nature and the waters and everything. So I, you know, kind of think that I'm just definitely different.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us. I appreciate you calling. That's very interesting stuff. We're going to go to John in Hugo, Oklahoma. Hi, John. Good morning.
Hey, George. Thank you. And Brad, one thing before my question is the book Exo Vaticana, which I found about on Coast, tells about how the Vatican has been preparing a whole new theology, and they're going to be the ones to do disclosure. They want to get ahead of the rest of the religions on this alien thing, and they've been working on it for a long time, and the new pope is all about that, and he's going to be the last pope, which will go along with Malachi's prophecy, and so that's that. But my question for Brad is whether you've heard about this new book, came out in 2013 by Susan B. Martinez, called The Lost History of the Little People. And it talks about all the diminutive races that exist all over the planet that all came out of the continent of Mu, or sometimes called Lemuria, in the middle of the Pacific. And she says that they're actually the mound builders. And the skeleton, the big skeletons in there may have been put in the mounds that were already there, you know, came later. But I was wondering whether you've run across any of that.
Well, yeah, I have. And I outlined the root races that Madame Blatovsky of the Theosophical Society portrayed. And she said many of these root races, some of them did come from Lemuria. The last one were the Atlanteans, and they were quite different. The ones who came from Lemuria turned out to be the southern India, or the Aboriginal people in Australia as they are today. Those were very dark-skinned, more primitive-looking people. I know that's a relative term, maybe not PC, but that they're different. And I've been to India, and I've seen these, I think it's Dinovzian is how it's pronounced, people of southern India, and they are quite vastly different, much shorter and much darker skinned. and much different looking than the northern and central Indian people.
John, thank you for that call. We have just about 2 minutes left, Brad. I'm just wondering, what happened to the giants? Did we humans kill them off? What happened to the little people? Because I, you know, you hear those stories in many, many different cultures around the world. Native Americans, for example, have those stories. I've heard it from different tribes all over the North America. What happened to them? Are they still around, or are they they're gone? And ditto for the giants.
Well, you know, in the law of the jungle, survival of the fittest, a little guy wouldn't have much chance against a big guy. So maybe some of them just got wiped out. Now, I did get a really great message from someone. It's real quick. He says, I remember reading in the early 1900s, a new director of the Smithsonian wanted to cover up the history of the skeletons, of the giant skeletons. So he made the employees clear the basement. The result was discarding hundreds or more giant skeletons into the ocean. So we were talking about it earlier, if Smithsonian still had them, but sounds like they all got dumped.
My gosh. So the little guys, I mean, you know, we saw that discovery a couple of years ago, these little hobbit race on the island, I think, in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
What do you make
of that? That's right. Yeah. And there is mythology of the small people in Hawaii. And they, too, got ran off by the larger Polynesians when they arrived.
And, of course, it's St. Patrick's Day, so we should mention the little people of Ireland, the leprechauns. Brad, it's been fun having you back. Modern Esoteric is this part of a three-part series. What's the other one?
Well, the other one's a couple years off. It's called Beyond Esoteric. But for all your listeners who are in Northern California, I'm doing the book launch party at the Institute of Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California on April 10th. And it's free and open to the public. I'm going to be speaking in the auditorium and would love to see people out there. And if you want to check out my books, you can read them all for free on cccpublishing.com. And there's information for ordering them on there too.
So the next one is Beyond Esoteric, but that's a ways away. We hope you'll let us know when it comes out. All right. Brad Olson, thanks very much for joining us. The book is called Modern Esoteric, covers a lot of ground. Check it out sometime. I want to say thanks to my friends and colleagues there at Premier, Nathan Staton, Gina Salvati, our webmaster tonight, Tim Binal, Dan Galati, and producer Chris Boros. I'll be back next Sunday. In fact, I'm hosting four of Coast to Coast programs this month. Hope you can tune in for all of those. As I mentioned, George Norrie is going to have a special program in the coming days about the late Dr. Roger Lear. I think that's coming up on Friday night. Check it out if you get a chance. Good night, everyone, and happy St. Patrick's Day.